The Shift Show, Captain's Log 15. In today's episode, Dwayne and Joe talk about private and channel meetings in Microsoft Teams. They cover differences between these two types of meetings and how they operate, some shortcomings, and workarounds and tips. Computer, schedule me a meeting with The Shift Show.
Hey, buddy. Happy New Year.
Hey, how's it going? I'm wondering, what's the moratorium on saying Happy New Year into this late in the month? But Happy New Year, you know?
Yeah, I had somebody say it yesterday, so I'm going to keep going.
Happy New Year to our listeners.
Last year was a wreck, so I'll certainly celebrate moving into a next
I think one. I've heard people saying a satisfactory New Year.
Satisfactory New Year. Like it. Oh, gosh.
Well, yeah, it's been a whirlwind so far of this new year for us so far. So excited to get back into our first podcast of the year.
Well, I thought that we could talk about some Teams fundamentals. I want to talk about something that's been around since Teams came out and something that we've used quite a bit, and that's Teams meetings. But more specifically, I find that our agents have a little bit of, I won't call it confusion, but there's a little bit of, it's kind of ambiguous. You know, what kind of meeting is it? Is it a private meeting where you just send out a calendar invite, or is it a channel meeting? And I think in the very early rollout of Teams, this actually led to a lot of confusion within our organization. Because I think you might remember, we had a lot of folks who thought that they had to create a team in order to even have a Teams meeting, which is definitely not accurate, but it happened.
Yeah, there was definitely confusion because, you know, the other platform they're using, there's basically just what we call in Teams, the private meetings. So yeah, channel meetings definitely started to throw people for a little bit of a loop. I think we had some issues around could an external person join meetings? And again, I think that comes from channel meetings. And we were trying to get people to collaborate, use a Teams platform. And where does that take you? That takes you into channels and using channels. And there's your ability to click Meet Now and start a channel meeting.
Wasn't it Microsoft that said channels is where the work gets done?
Yeah.
I think.
And then sometimes not as, no, I think I've heard that. But not as easily sometimes with getting getting your meetings done in those channels. They've definitely been a different beast with respect to some of the nuances between channel meetings and private meetings.
I think in addition to some of the confusion about like the fundamental differences between those two kinds of meetings, I think it's important for us to talk about this because there's actually some feature differences between those two meetings that we're going to get into later. So I guess if I were going to outline this conversation, the first thing that we would do is we're going to define what is a private meeting or a standard meeting versus a channel meeting. You know, what happens when you do each of those and how do they work? And then we're going to talk about, I think in our notes, we actually just call it straight up and say some of the shortcomings of channel meetings and how to work around some of the shortcomings. Because like I just said, the features are not the same. Unfortunately, it's a different experience. Even though they're both Teams meetings, it's a different experience. So you ready to dive in?
Yeah, let's go.
I'm going to start with channel meetings. And the reason I'm going to start with channel meetings is because that's where we started. You know, that was in education, channel meetings probably are going to be the most common. And our agents are educators, you know, but not in the sense of like K-12 teachers and classes and stuff like that. They're mostly educating folks outside. So, but they still use channel meetings for youth programs like 4-H and things like that. So the first thing about a channel meeting is, number one, it requires you to have a team, and the meeting actually takes place inside of a channel. So the accessibility, not accessibility in the sense of accessibility, but accessibility in the sense of who can actually get to that meeting is actually defined by who's a member of the team.
So that first level is security, is what we're kind of talking about there with respect to some differences is around access to the team membership of the team is your first stepping off point into a channel meeting to understand one of those key differences between that and a private meeting.
Yeah. And we always use like a building analogy or a house analogy when we're talking about channel meetings, because we use channel meetings almost exclusively when we do our virtual conferences using Teams, because it allows you to, just like you said, your ticket into the meeting is being added to the team. You know, like you have to be in the building to be able to walk into the conference room, you know? And so if you don't have the keys to the building, you can't get into the meeting, more or less. And so, yeah, that's a good starting point, is that meeting is going to immediately be available to all your team members or teammates, I guess. It's obviously in a channel. So one thing that we do is, you know, every team that you create, you get a general channel, but we actually like to create a meetings channel. So that way all the content that is connected to that meeting always stays in that channel. All the conversations, files that are shared, you know, whatever, you can go to the meetings channel and kind of actually build like a, I guess like a historical context of all the meetings that you've ever had. If it's like a committee or again, a class or something like that.
I think touching on what you said there, kind of the history is important for the concept of a team. You change memberships on a team. How do they gain access to what's been happening in that team in the past? And that's where the benefit of a channel meeting comes in, is the conversations that happen around that channel meeting, because it's producing a conversation thread in that channel that can go back, can be searched, that can be discovered. Your recording is going to be saved into that team and accessible. So when you onboard a new employee, if you're using channel meetings, they're going to be able to ramp up to speed a lot faster.
Yeah, that's a great point. That the meeting is just another post, you know, and every single reply that happened during that meeting is a part of that post, which we're actually going to talk about some little hacky workarounds that you can use that to your advantage later in the show. But yeah, the history that gets built, one of the things that we're kind of proud of, not to sound like we're bragging or anything, but it is useful, is our champions community has 32 consecutive months of meetings. So we've met 32 consecutive times, and you can go back into our meetings channel in our team and see every single one of those and scroll back, see what people were talking about, see what the title was, access the recording and watch it. So that is pretty cool. And like you said, that's oftentimes one of the things that we use when we compare like an email list versus a team, is you get added to an email list, you only know what's happening from that moment forward. You don't have any historical context about how that community worked or different topics that they might have talked about. In team search, you know, you can actually search and discover those meetings and stuff a lot easier.
Yeah, hit Control F in that channel, and you can search just in that channel and drill through what's happened in the past.
There's a little bit of a difference with files and recordings as well. So because it's a channel in a team, you have a files tab, and so you can upload files. And so if you attach a file during the meeting, it's actually just going to upload it into the channel. And because it's a channel, everybody who's in the team will automatically have access to it. The same thing happens with recordings. It doesn't matter who hits the record button. In this case, the Teams is going to create a folder called recordings if it doesn't exist already, and it's going to dump the video file of the meeting right there. And so again, as soon as it's done, everybody in the team has access to it just by virtue of being a team member.
There's we've seen some inconsistency with the file names that get generated.
Yes,
a little bit. So they've kind of bounced around between like the name of the channel. Some of our recordings have shown up as having the name of the title or intention that we gave it. And that's caused us and caused you a little bit of problems. Like if you, one thing like we like to do is take our recordings and put them in a web part in a SharePoint page and bring that in as a tab, so that it's an easy way for people to access those recordings. You can put some context around them, put them in a certain order you might like. But that naming scheme is, you know, can throw you off a little bit. You might have to do a little bit of different technique there for looking at the folder they're in or something like that. But yeah, it's definitely something to look out for if you're looking to automate access to those recordings, perhaps in a SharePoint page.
Yeah, you know, we were just looking at this and that community we were talking about where we had the 32 consecutive meetings. I just looked in the January meeting had the file that it made had the prefix of like what I named the meeting. I'm sorry, the December meeting had it and the January meeting didn't. So I don't know. I mean, I scheduled the meetings exactly the same way, so I don't know what's up with that. But we have seen that for the last several months that's been occurring. And we'll call it a bug, a glitch, whatever, but it is happening. So yeah, definitely a good call out to look out for that. You want to take us into what are known as private meetings?
Yeah, let's do the one that people might be familiar with in other applications, other services like this. This is kind of how most of them work. Again, channel meetings are pretty unique to Teams. So in the Teams world, we have private meetings. Sometimes we call them standalone meetings. They're, you know, we don't want to use the word siloed, but that's what they are. If you're joining into a private meeting, it is just for people who have access to that link, who've been added on a calendar for that meeting, people that have been, you know, added to the required line. It's really kind of what we're used to going back to our Skype days and things like that. So if you've got the link, if you've been added to the calendar item, you're going to participate able to join that private meeting. You can set up recurring meetings. You get chat. You can still share files in those. I would say one thing that we're going to be covering a little bit on this is that's where all the kind of the new hotness shows up first too for private. Private meetings, where all the new, meeting apps and message extensions, attendance reports, things like that come through, it seems like, private meetings first. We've heard there's a little bit of complications on the backside around that security that a channel meeting brings in, why we see things often delayed before they come over to private meetings. I'm sorry, before they come over to channel meetings. So private meetings can be converted into webinars, which give you, your registration interface into your meetings. You know, that kind of gives you the ability to replicate some of those services that are out there where you want people to sign up for your meeting. And they get access to a meeting link after sign up. They can kind of manage their own access to that meeting. They could cancel their access to that meeting if they want to. That's not something you can kind of put on front of a channel meeting. Definitely different purpose there.
You're definitely right about all the new toys come into private meetings first, which has been a point of frustration for us for sure. Is again, in education, I feel like channel meetings are really kind of where it's at. Because if you're a teacher and you have a class, you have a class team, it makes sense to have your meeting in the team where your students are, and the idea, channel meetings are a foreign concept to a lot of people. Cause like you said earlier, that's a team specific thing. You're not going to find that anywhere else with any other app, any other video conferencing program, because Teams is not a video conferencing program. It's a collaboration platform that does meetings. And so we have seen some confusion about that because it's different. It's a different way to think about it. But again, like you said, a lot of the new stuff, when meeting transcriptions first rolled out, you could transcribe a private meeting, but you couldn't transcribe a channel meeting. And I think that is maybe in the last month. I don't know, because the holidays have me all like messed up. Do the holidays even really count as time? So, but somewhere in the last 60 days, we'll say, just came out with the capability to transcribe a channel meeting. And, private meetings have been doing it for quite a while. I'll pump the brakes here on that because we have a whole section here in our notes on shortcomings and workarounds for channel meetings.
Yeah, so. we'll cover those. So, one of the other things to understand that how they work a little differently is recordings for private meetings. There isn't, that's not backed by a team. So your recordings are going to go into OneDrive. And it really, we're going to link to this in the show notes, but basically whoever clicks record is going to have that recording go into their OneDrive. The organizer of that private meeting is going to have edit rights, share rights over that. So they can share that out back to people if they need to or download it. But really, I think we looked through that list and we were wondering why the column, they kind of made some columns a little complicated. It's like, if you clicked record, it goes to your OneDrive.
It would have been so much easier if they would have just said that. Like, there's this complicated table with like a decoder ring, you know, that you have to have to figure out what the heck it's saying. And basically, to summarize it, is whoever pushed record has the file. So I think one thing that we should, this isn't in our notes, but I think we should talk about this, is this is an important reason of why, no matter if it's a channel meeting, private meeting, whatever, if you're the organizer of the meeting, you should definitely go back into your calendar, click on the meeting, and go into the meeting options, because only a presenter can click record. And so as an organizer, you know, whoever scheduled it, like you said, you'll always have access to the recording no matter who actually pushed record. But do you really want it just going to some random person's computer or random person's OneDrive? So go into the meeting options, regardless of what it is, and make sure that you specify who your presenters are, either just yourself, or you can choose from whoever you've explicitly invited to the meeting. You can make them a presenter ahead of time, because attendees can't push record. So
just want to throw that out there. Yep, that's a great point. Great point. Or again, external attendees aren't going to be able to, too. If you're having a webinar that you've published out on the internet, and you've got mostly people who are attending from outside of your tenant, you're not going to have to worry about that either.
A webinar actually handles those meeting options for you, which is a good thing. So if you are using Teams webinars, then still double check it, but there's definitely a pretty much 100% possibility that the people you've invited will be presenters and nobody else will be. So that's one of the benefits of webinar. I think we actually heard somebody refer to a webinar as a meeting template. That I can't remember who we were talking to, but they said it was more or less a meeting template, and it kind of like pre-configured the meeting for you, which is very convenient.
And some of the external meetings that we're on, it's one thing, you know, while we're talking about this, is that with that recording, is if you're open to having that recording available to your guests, your external attendees, people who are not part of your tenant, they're not going to have access to that recording unless you actually share it out to them. So if there's people who've attended your private meeting who are, you know, part of your tenant, they'll have access, but people who are external are not going to have access. You'll need to share that out. Take an extra step.
I mean, luckily it's just like sharing anything else in OneDrive, just like sharing a file, you know, go to your recordings directory, right click, share, figure out, you know, how you want to do it, and post a link back into the meeting chat. Cause that's one thing that's nice with a private meeting, is the chat is like this consistent space that, you know, we're on some calls that are recurring standard meetings or recurring private meetings. I should use the right name. It's called a private meeting. But they happen every month and it's the same exact meeting. And so the chat is this long running chat that however long I've been attending those monthly meetings, I can go back in the chat and see. So that's a really nice point. But you could just drop that link right in the chat and everybody who was on the call will see that.
Do you have to be aware is that that chat will live around, and be prepared for people to kind of use that chat when there's maybe not a meeting going. It depends on some settings that you can change now, I think, around whether or not chat's available, you know, only during the meeting. So that's another, you know, as you said, go in and look at your meeting options and make sure they're set for how you want to manage that.
Yeah, we have had some super random instances where somebody, I don't even know how this happens, but 6 months later, somebody sends a chat message in a meeting chat, you know, that was 6 months ago, and there was, I don't know, 200 people on the meeting. And so they all get a chat message from this one person. I don't want to be that person, but I'm not going to call anybody out, but don't be that person, because it definitely doesn't look right. But yeah, the meeting options, there is a, can't remember specifically what it's called, but it's basically more or less chat will only be available to you if you're actively on the call. And then once you hang up from the call, you can no longer just go into your Teams app and chat like it was a group chat. So definitely check that one for sure too.
One thing to cover that is helpful to know is that both do support private meetings, and channel meetings do support breakout rooms. And I think channel meetings have gotten pre-creation now too.
Yeah, they both do pre-creation of breakout rooms. Only to the organizer. And I believe if you assign a breakout room manager, which must be someone who you've already pre-designated as a presenter. But yeah, you could create breakout rooms before your meeting starts. One of the things that we run into a little bit, and this, again, in education, especially in extension education, I see a lot of use cases for breakout rooms. And you know, requests from agents for breakout rooms. And one of the things in Teams that's kind of a shortcoming right now is, number one, users can't move themselves into a breakout room. And number two, the only way that you can pre-configure the roster of a breakout room is if the people have accepted the meeting invite and you actually see them on that optional or required line on the meeting invite. That's the only way that you can predetermine what room they go to. But you can build all the rooms ahead of time, name them, you can assign managers or presenters to those rooms. So there is a lot of, it's gotten a lot better. it's gotten better.
Those managers, real quick, they do need to have been added to the two line, basically accepted that meeting to show up in that list. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't talk about apps though. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but we didn't talk about the apps that, like, that's one of the things that's been pretty exciting recently, is there's a lot of meeting apps now, especially basic ones like first party apps like Polling, which is powered by Forms. It's kind of in flux right now. It might actually be called Polls. It might actually be called Forms. I don't know which, but
Forms by, you know, Polls by Forms, you know, yeah. Or something like that.
Yeah. So it allows you to pre-create polls, you know, so if, again, from an extension educator perspective, if you know there's something that you want to ask the audience at certain increments to either keep them engaged or kind of do a quick knowledge assessment, because you can do quizzes through polls as well. You can also do some word cloud stuff now, which is kind of cool. Like, I remember we did one for a conference we did that was international. And so we said, you know, type in where you're from, and then you get to see like this word cloud get built on the fly of where people are from. Nobody else said Ocala National Forest except me, which was kind of sad. So my word was tiny, but you know,
and the polls are great, in these private meetings. But where, you mentioned earlier, like our 4-H, and working with youth in a team, having a channel meeting, and having a meeting where you, like you said, you want to have some engagement and continuing some engagement with those youth, and Forms are a great way. They're, you know, typically they would, in a private meeting, I think the word is modal, a pop-up that shows up in the middle of your video screen. You can, you know, there's that poll right in your face. You know, we're switching over to some shortcomings, workarounds in channel meetings. That's something that, you know, is troublesome and doesn't work over there right now.
I feel like a listener might be thinking, like, man, they were really excited to get to the shortcomings part, because we've talked about it 3 or 4 times now. But you know what? Let's go ahead and bite the bullet. Get into it. Joe, what just doesn't freaking work in a channel meeting that's frustrating? Like, I get so angry about this because I wish that it was the same experience. If anybody is listening from Microsoft, we wish this was the same experience. It's a Teams meeting. It's difficult to explain to our users. oh, you had a meeting? Well, what kind of meeting was it? Oh, well, that's why you couldn't actually do polling. Anyway, I'll get off that. So
I mean, that's a big one is the polls. It's popular. It's done very well in the other tools they use. And we need that feature parity over in-channel meetings. Because again, that's where a lot of our users are working. There's a trick around that though, isn't there? So, I mean, you can kind of get around it. It's just, again, why do we have to be doing workarounds and tricks? And they're hard to explain.
The workaround is, remember back at the beginning of this episode, we talked about your channel meeting is actually a post inside of a channel. It is, sorry, my dog's barking back there, but it is a post in a channel. And what we have found is when you're actually in a channel meeting and you're looking at like the meeting chat, like, moving it against what would be a private meeting, you can't see the option to insert a poll. But if you flip back over to your Teams window and you go to the channel where your meeting is being held, you'll actually see the same conversation. And you can post a message in the channel just like you would normally. And you can insert a poll there, a quick poll. Now, it's not going to pop up on the screen, like you said earlier, like a proper meeting app would. But it will show up in the meeting chat to everybody who's on the call. So the major disadvantage here is you can't pre-create them. Like, you have to make it on the fly. Which is, you know, not ideal, especially if you're an educator, an agent, whatever, and you're like, I got six things I want to ask this crowd, you know, for reporting or whatever it might be. You don't want to have to sit there and type out the question and the five answers that, you know, you want them to select from. So that's kind of a big letdown, I guess.
Yeah. And you could create the poll and drop a link in or something like that too. It's not ideal. It's not the best experience, and it's inferior to what we get in private meetings. Same thing with accessing and bringing in the whiteboard, which is, you know, that has undergone some significant upgrades and updates. Hopefully that, you know, gets proper treatment in our channel meetings too.
Yeah, if you do a private meeting and you have it on your calendar, and you go to the meeting details, you'll actually have a whiteboard tab, I think, by default. You know, because they're expecting maybe some whiteboarding collaboration to happen in that call. And one of the things about this that's kind of neat is it does give an educator the opportunity to pre-populate a whiteboard. You know, maybe you don't want to start literally from scratch. You want to start with, you know, like you said, whiteboard's undergone some pretty cool enhancements lately, and they've added all kinds of like templates of things that you could inject into a whiteboard for brainstorming and those types of things. So maybe based on the subject of your meeting, you want to go ahead and pre-populate it with some stuff. Well, you can't do that with a channel meeting. A workaround kind of would be to create a whiteboard in your personal account and then share it into a channel meeting. Again, it's not going to belong to everyone. It's still going to belong to you, but it's kind of a workaround. So you can still do it. We've done it in our community calls. When we've demonstrated whiteboard, which has been kind of fun to have like 100 people just mashing stuff all over a whiteboard, but it's possible to work around that, but it's definitely not as clean as a private meeting. And this is kind of still operating in the same sphere of meeting apps. I think whiteboard would still be considered like a meeting app. So just channel meetings just don't have support for meeting apps yet.
The other one that is really great and been seeing a number of improvements is the meeting recap section of a private meeting. You know, after the meeting's over, you used to have to go, you know, try to figure out where the attendance was, pull that through the chat area. Now they've got it all consolidated into the meeting recap area for your recording and your attendance, your transcript, all are this nice, you know, tab panel with respect to that meeting. We're not, you know, we don't get that in a channel meeting. We have seen attendance being available now, but it's
I don't even know when that rolled out. That was a surprise to us.
Exactly. Yeah. But we're seeing it in the meeting thread is where that, you know, the chat thread is where that's showing up. But yeah, having that recap, that single pane to go look at everything that was important about that meeting. Because, you know, again, channel meetings easily are just as important as a private meeting. They should get that same respect.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one thing that sets Teams apart from other video conferencing platforms is that ability to just go back in your calendar and click on a meeting and have everything that happened, all the chat, because the chat becomes a tab, the download for the transcript, the recording, any files that were shared, all that kind of stuff is just right there, all in one screen. Channel meetings, a little bit different. The chat is all there because it happened inside of a channel. So there's no need to, we've had people say, you know, hey, don't forget to download the chat before we hang up. You don't have to do that. You don't have to worry about that. It's going to be there. But yeah, if you're an organizer, and again, I keep saying agents because our agents have a lot of reporting requirements. And so they really need to be able to go and get that attendance report and validate how many people were there, because they have to measure their impact, you know, at the end of the year. And so being able to quickly find that attendance report used to be kind of a pain in the butt. You had to go through the conversation. You had to go through the chat and basically scroll up and down until you found the download link for whenever the meeting ended. It's gotten better because you can see it in, there's an attendance tab. You still can't download it. You still have to go into the chat to actually download it, like to get an Excel file. If you needed that, if you needed anything beyond just saying, you know, there were 122 people on this call, you do have to go through the chat to find the recording, or go into the files tab to find that recording. So it's a little bit more unorganized, I guess would probably be the right word. I mean, it's definitely doable, but it's not as nice and neatly packaged as a private meeting.
Another thing that you kind of like you just touched on was a channel meeting. The chat is in that channel, but probably in our case with our agents dealing with youth, I can imagine K-12 having a channel meeting. If you want some serious focus with what is going on with the, you know, the educator, the presenter, and really focus your attendees. In a private meeting, you can disable chat and just have a one-way push of, you know, video and audio. Can't do that in a channel meeting where it can make sense. Definitely, I would imagine, you know, some K-12, certainly, and dealing, you know, in youth, you definitely want a better chance of them kind of paying attention to your instructor. So
that's,
you know. Maybe down the road.
It's just
we'll
funny.
See.
I'm just imagining like an unruly virtual class of sixth graders and, you know, having unlimited access to chat. This doesn't seem like a good idea.
No. So
there's a workaround for that. Because the chat is actually a conversation thread in a channel. And again, I know that's a lot to unpack, but remember, you've got a house, which is your team. You've got some rooms inside of it, which are your channels. And you can give somebody access or no access to post a message. And so if you disable their ability to post a message, you have effectively turned off their ability to chat in the meeting. It's, again, the inconsistency here from a user's perspective is what bothers me. You know, a regular private meeting, you go into the meeting options and you flip a slider that turns off meeting chat. But in a team, you'd actually have to go into the channel itself and set the settings on the channel through the little three-dot meatball menu and turn on channel moderation. It's just not as intuitive as I'd like to see it be, but it is possible if, again, we're, you know, hashtag workaround podcast. So you can get the job done. It's just not as straightforward and right there as in your face as you'd think it would be.
How about notifications around channel meetings? Are you, especially when you have, let's think about this, if you have a team that has guests too, that also throws kind of a little difference, a little loop there in for notifications.
And yeah, we'll have to get into the weeds here a little bit. I'll give us a couple minutes to do this because this is going to be, yeah, it's going to get nerdy. Just warning, it's going to get nerdy. So there's this concept of this thing in Office 365 called an Office 365 group. And it's, we'll call it more or less like a shared mailbox with a calendar in it. And when you add people to a team, you're kind of connecting them to it. And we've noticed some major inconsistencies when you schedule a channel meeting on if the members of your team are going to get a calendar invite or not. It's been terrible. I just don't even know how else to describe it. It's been all over the place. And it's been like that as long as I can remember, which has been incredibly frustrating. We've had a lot of people come to us and say, I scheduled a meeting and nobody showed up. It's because nobody got an invite. So some things that you can do to kind of help yourself with that is you can tag your team. So you schedule your meeting in a channel and then immediately follow up, reply to the post that it made and tag your team and tell them to add it to their calendar. If they click the three dots on the post that is the meeting, there's an option that says add to calendar. So they could do that. If you're feeling really, really nerdy, you can actually, there's, you know, maybe in the show notes, Joe, we might need to write up like a how-to guide here. There's a way that you can get to the actual settings of that Office 365 group and modify the notification settings on it to make sure that people are getting notifications.
And that's as an organizer. Yeah. You can do that, but each individual user
or an owner, team owner. Yeah.
A team owner. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. It needs to be a team owner, but individuals can also go in there and make changes if they've come across that. So, and basically override and make changes to what you might think they might be. So again, like you said, it can be
in the weeds.
Yeah.
But, in the weeds for sure.
Yeah. But that workaround is that app mention to that team, to that channel, to call out that scheduled meeting.
That comes up a lot.
That generates it.
Mm-hmm. You know, we may end up with a whole episode just on how to tag people because we have a lot of things come up where we have folks who want to move away from a mailing list and use Teams. But then they say things like, well, how do I know that people read my message? And our response is, well, how do you know they read your email? You don't. So at least in Teams, you have analytics where you can see if the team is active and healthy. But using those tags, really, it will push an email. I mean, it achieves the same exact result. If you at team and the people in the team don't acknowledge it or read it, I think what's the default, 20 minutes, they'll get an email. And the email will say, Joe's trying to get your attention. You know, click here to read what he said. So you can do the same thing. And, you know, I don't know. I know that's a side tangent, but use your tags more and use your tags responsibly. Tag responsibly. Yeah,
you could easily include in your post a link with all the information in a SharePoint page where you can get actual analytics on viewership. So that SharePoint news.
Yep. But what else do we have? Like if we were gonna talk about some positive things of channel meetings and private meetings, things that they both do very well, what would we say? I'm struggling a little bit.
I think we covered it briefly a little bit. Is, you know, we've got breakouts. We got breakouts in both now working well. The attendance is there. Clearly important in a channel meeting for our educators and for our agents. It's not in the best location. It would be nice if it was, kind of in our meeting panel attached to the meeting itself. You know, those are a couple significant things that we've seen come around to channel meetings.
I think it might sound like it might sound like we're channel meeting haters, but we're not. Like, we're rooting for them. I'm rooting for the underdog here. I hope that they get more features like they ought to. And again, like we said earlier, in education, K-12 education with classes, extension education with clubs and things like that, I think they're really where it's at. I mean, that's where the stuff happens, is in channels. And having your meetings just sitting there alongside all the other work that you're doing just kind of makes sense.
they simplify a bunch of stuff, you know, like the access to that recording. If you know everybody on your call is going to want access to that recording, and if you're all in the same team, that's the place to have your meeting. You save time as the organizer.
Or you're a member of the club or the committee or whatever it is that had the meeting and you missed it. You don't have to ask questions. You don't have to wait on a share link. You don't have to go hunting. You know immediately, oh, I go to the team, I go to the channel where we have our meetings, and I'll find the recording there and I'll watch it. You know, it really eliminates a lot of conversations and questions that might get asked if you know how to use it.
And those meetings are, you know, locked down and secured, you know, to those members of that team. So that's, you know, a little bit, an added security layer, for you, one way to reduce, accidentally, having people you don't want in your meeting is through your channel meetings that are, you know, part of that team.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to accidentally stumble into a channel meeting. and I think I'm going to replace pretty hard with impossible. Cause you really, like, you have to have a direct link. Somebody had to have explicitly invited you or given you the meeting URL to even be able to join it. You're not going to punch in a code and randomly jump into a channel meeting. And, you know, we use it a lot for our virtual conferences. Again, I don't think we can go one freaking podcast without talking about virtual conferences. Really, people are really going to think that's all we do, but it is really where it's at in regards to how to have consecutive sessions. So in a team, you can have 20 channels, and all 20 of those channels can all have meetings running in them simultaneously. And that's a really cool thing. Like, that really is where I visualize like a digital hotel. Like, you've got a conference venue with a bunch of rooms and a bunch of speakers all speaking simultaneously, and you as an attendee have to decide where you want to go and which room you want to walk into. Teams is doing the exact same thing perfectly. And in this digital world, you just click on the channel that you're interested in and jump into that call. And so channel meetings really put all in the same place.
Yeah. And think of it as from the user side, is they have that one place and they can see all that activity happening. All those lit up, you know, those rooms all lit up with a little camera icon. They know that this is active. They know that there's something happening. And I think that gives, you know, a little better view to how active that conference is, what's going on with that our virtual venue that way, than you have no idea what's going on if you have a web page that's got 20 links on it and you think there's something behind those. You know really what's going on. It helps you actually not have to have almost an agenda. You can just simply walk these conference rooms like if you were at a real conference.
You know, that's a fantastic point, because when you look at a web page, you don't even know if that meeting's still running, you know. But with a channel meeting, you can actually see the camera icon on the channel, or you can see the fact that the meeting is in progress before you click it. And so that's a great point. I'm so torn. Like, I really feel like just the idea here is to empower our agents and educators with the knowledge that this is how these two different things work. And, you know, depending on your situation, use the one that is best for you for that moment. You know, and you might use a channel meeting for one thing and a private meeting for another. We just want to make sure that you know how they work, and that will empower you to make good decisions when it comes to how you schedule your calls, whether it be a webinar with a largely external audience, or a committee, you know, where you're making important decisions, or a class where you're meeting every single month and you're teaching people something. You know, you've got options, which is, I guess options are good as long as they're not overwhelming, right? So I think that's really the root of this episode, is to just make sure people understand what to use and when to use it and how to use it to work better for them.
I think you've got some good wins in this last month since we've been last podcast to cover now.
Yeah, first of all, we're pretty late on our podcast. Not pretty late, but kind of late. The holidays, you know, again, I'll blame the time warp that we went into. You went into a actual time warp, like where where you went, time changed, right?
Just a few hours. Yeah, I definitely had a wonderful getaway over the holidays to France. With the wife, we met her family, her sister, our 9-year-old niece. Did a little time in Marseille along the coast. Did some hiking. Tried to not kill ourselves doing a little rock climbing, little beach time there.
You
beautiful
sent me
weather.
Some photos that I would say don't say that you weren't trying to kill yourself, because that was terrifying.
Same for us. Definitely the I guess the most dangerous we've done. Although we don't do danger. Then from there went into the Alps, and first time ever snow skiing. So grew up in Michigan. It's pretty flat. I saw too many of my friends coming back getting injured when I was a kid. I loved baseball. I did not want to mess up my sport. Never skied. But my 9-year-old niece, she really, really wanted to get out on the slopes and teach me. And she did a great job. I survived 6 days of skiing, a couple hours a day of some instruction.
Came back with no broken bones. You could still walk. Like, it was all good.
I think the last day out and back, going up chairlifts and down slopes, did almost 10 kilometers that day. So there's some really, really amazing slopes there. I was able to graduate from green to blue. There's red and black. I don't know if I care to get there. I'm very happy where I was. So. But I'm pretty hooked now. It was great.
Well, you're not going to get many skiing opportunities here in Florida. So if you're hooked, you have a problem.
Yeah, you have to be on the water. I definitely grew up doing a lot of water skiing.
I've seen snow once. Yeah. I don't get out much. Well, I think you
did get out though.
Yeah, I did. I did a little bit. I'm gonna snag two wins. One I'm gonna do for myself, and one I'm gonna do for both of us. My personal win was it was my anniversary with my wife, and so we got out of town for a little bit, went down to Treasure Island, Florida, and got to watch a Gulf Coast sunset, which was really nice. I think Gulf Coast sunsets. Like, I've been on both sides. I've seen the sunrise and the sunset, and I was telling my wife, I was like, I think the sunsets are better. Like, if I had to vote, I'd vote on sunsets. And especially in Southwest Florida, super beautiful, some great pictures. And then we had some sort of crazy storm roll through, and there were wind gusts of like 45 and 50 miles an hour and tornadoes and all kinds of wild stuff, and definitely not what I expected. And we did a quarter of a mile, I'm going to call it a hike to a coffee shop. It shouldn't have been a hike, but when you're going against the wind like that and getting sandblasted in the face, it was pretty wild, but it was a good time. We laughed the whole way, sand in our teeth, the whole thing. But yeah, it was great to get away for a couple of days with my wife and celebrate our anniversary. So 16 years, I think. I better get that right.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, 16 years for sure. But a collective win that I want to talk about that's super nerdy. So again, nerd alert. We did a pretty much an all-nighter at one of our research centers doing our very first server replacement. All of our research centers and extension offices have servers, and our research centers are getting a bit of an upgrade, and it was really complicated. I think the last time we talked, I described it as open heart brain surgery, and that's more or less what we did on the server. We'd done it in a lab. We knew theoretically it would work, but you know, when you get on site, things are always different. When you try to do it in the real world and it's not in, you know, a perfect little lab environment. And that definitely was the case. there was definitely things that did not go how we thought they were going to go, but we made it work. Everything was successful, which I can't even believe it. I'm afraid to even say that out loud. Like, I need to knock on wood or something to make sure something doesn't explode. But everything worked exactly how we wanted it to in the end, as far as the results go. The research center is now just cruising on this all flash storage server, very fast. No user impact. Because we did it all at like 2 o'clock in the morning, which was
exactly,
you know, kind of scary that we're, you know, low on sleep and making decisions like
hotel that. Room.
Yeah, over Wi-Fi on a hotel internet connection. So, but it worked, and I'm proud of us. You know, I'm proud of us. We did it. It there was no meltdown. Everything was great. So I'm super happy about that. Can't wait to do the next one. We got like 20 more to go, so it's going to be a long ride, but we're going to get it done. So,
definitely looking forward to doing a little more road trips back in Florida. We were doing those for a good year and a half, training people on teams. But
yeah,
that's been a couple of years.
Yeah, this whole pandemic thing got in our way. So, but anyhow. Well, I hope that people, you know, I know we didn't get too technical. At least we tried not to, but... Again, we call this kind of like a team's fundamentals. You know, you're an educator, you're an extension agent, you've got some programming, you've got options. You know, you've got a 4-H club, maybe a channel meeting is a good thing, and you should bring all your kids in as guests. You're a K-12 educator, you know, you should have a class team anyway. You know, again, you're an agent, you're doing some public programming, and you're going to teach people about mushrooms or whatever it is that you are doing. Maybe a private meeting or a webinar is the right tool for you. So knowing the differences between how they work, where your recordings go, what kind of options you have as far as meeting extensions and polls and those types of things, we just feel like the more you know, the better decisions you can make when it comes to using these things. So hopefully you got a little bit from this, and that's the goal. Again, thank you everyone for listening and hanging out with us this long. And we hope that your next meeting is a great meeting. And we will see you next month. We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Shift Show. If you found our content useful, please consider subscribing and leaving us a 5-star review. This will help others find our show. If you'd like to connect with us, you can find us on LinkedIn or on our homepage at aka.my/shiftshow. We'll beam back next month for a new episode.
Transporter room, stand by to beam up landing party.